Welcome to History, Books, and Wine,
where three author friends talk about books
and fun historical tidbits,
all while raising a glass of vino.
We're your hosts, Lori Ann Bailey,
Eliza Knight,
and Madeline Martin. So, pour a glass and enjoy the show. Welcome to episode 9 of the History Books and Wine podcast, and thank you for joining us for our third happy hour. On this podcast, you'll get all three of us. I'm Madeline Martin, a USA Today bestselling author of historical romances with page-turning action and strong heroines.
Woohoo! I'm so happy to be back here with you guys. I missed you. I am Eliza Knight, USA Today bestselling author of Scottish historical romance with irresistible heroes, courageous heroines, and daring adventure. Under my name E. Knight, I write Rip Your Heart Out historical fiction that crosses the landscapes around the world.
And hello, everyone. I'm so happy to be here with everybody for our happy hour. I've already got my glass of wine. I'm Lori Ann Bailey, and I'm a National Reader's Choice and Holt Medallion award-winning author who writes Scottish historicals with hot Highland heroes and spunky independent lasses finding their perfect matches in the Scottish Highlands. Today, we've all chosen one person in history that fascinates us, and we're going to give you three fun facts about them. Then we're going to have a quiz game and see who wins. But first, what are we drinking tonight? It looks like I'm up first. Tonight, I'm having Kenwood Vineyards 2015 Merlot, and here's a little description about it. Our Sonoma County wines showcase the vibrant fruit and balanced complexities for which this beautiful region is famous. Sourced from the finest regions of the county, grapes from our Merlot vineyards are picked, fermented, and aged separately in a combination of French and American oak barrels. The result is a wine offering velvety textures with a vibrant ripe plum and black cherry flavors. And it's actually very good. And I have to say, the reason I chose this wine tonight is because I've had the Kenwood Cabernet Sauvignon in the past. This was on sale at the grocery store, and I've had Kenwood Vineyards wines in the past. So I tried it a couple weeks ago and really enjoyed it. But I went back last week and it was still on sale for $7.99. So I snapped up two bottles. And since I had two bottles in my wine cabinet, there were too many, so I picked this one tonight.
I think that's a good reason.
Yeah, I like that reason.
Thank you.
So tonight I am drinking Bogle Old Vine Zinfandel, and from their website it says, for years, Bogle winemakers have sought out vines ranging in age from 60 to 80 years old for our Old Vine Zinfandel. These gnarly, head-trained, and dry-farmed pioneers produce low yields of small, concentrated clusters of fruit, producing incredibly intense and flavorful wines. The tasting notes are barrel-aged in American oak for 12 months, raspberries and peppercorn, juniper and dried herbs, and vanilla. And I really do taste the vanilla. It's very delicious. The reason I chose this wine tonight is because my brother gave me three bottles of it in a case of wine that he bought me, because a couple of weeks ago I babysat his two-month-old baby while him and his lovely lady went on a vacation. Their baby seriously is the most happy little baby ever.
You don't say that on air or else you're never going to get wine again.
Yeah. I really don't deserve this wine.
I should have two cases next time.
Smartest brother ever bringing you wine.
Exactly. And it's so funny because now we have like this joke, because he bought me several of this one, and this is the second bottle from the case that he got me. So now we text each other and I'm like, hey, tonight I'm getting bogled. Just, you know, silly. But it's really, really delicious. So it's actually going on my to buy like every time list.
Ooh. Does it have that really cool plastic top? The one that spirals? I had gotten the Bogle one time. The reason I actually got it is because I was on vacation with kids and I needed wine, and I didn't have a wine opener, and so I got it and had the really cool plastic, like where you uncurl it and then it pops off.
Yeah. I do want to read to you what the cork says, because this I thought was very cool. The cork says, in water one sees one's own face, but in wine one beholds the heart of another. And it's says it's a French proverb.
I like that.
I just really like that a lot.
I like that too.
It makes me happy while I drink my wine.
Happier.
Happier. Yeah. Happier. Yes, happier.
My wine choice tonight is Cooper's Hawk Cabernet Sauvignon. The sight is an opaque ruby red. The nose has a bouquet of mixed berries, pencil shavings, interestingly enough.
Ooh.
Herbs and a wealth of spices are complemented by a cigar box and oak nuances.
Oh, that's interesting.
The palate is displaying true varietal character, supported by a... This is a really big bottle of wine, and I've already had a lot. Sorry. Starting over. Displaying true varietal character, supported by a solid structure and great balance, this wine will continue to drink well for years to come. Why I am drinking this particular wine. First of all, John and I love Cooper's Hawk. It's a winery. It's a chain, and they have the most amazing food, and they do wine tasting, and you can member of the...
There's one by us now, but I haven't been yet.
Oh, I want to go.
Got to go. It's $35 a month for a membership, and you get 2 free bottles of wine and 2 wine tastings a month. It's awesome.
That's awesome.
And it makes sure that we go out for date night once a month, which is important.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. I just recently had a birthday, and John bought me apparently the biggest bottle of wine that you can legally purchase in the state of Florida, and it was a Cooper's Hawk, and it was this Cabernet Sauvignon. We opened it last night, so, I mean, what else do you do with a massive bottle of wine but drink it?
That's true.
True.
So, but I was telling the girls that I didn't bring my wine in with me tonight for 2 reasons. First of all, it's a 2-handed pour because this thing is so big. I was really worried that I was going to drop it, and it was going to go all over my cream-colored carpets. And second, I have a really, really big glass of wine tonight because that thing just guzzles out. Like, there is no delicate pour. And I have a big glass, so I think it's like I probably have half a bottle in this glass right now. So if I have a hangover tomorrow, I can just be like, but I only had one glass. I just don't
care. How did this happen?
That's true.
Drink tons of water and take 2 Advil.
Yes. I will definitely be posting pictures online too of it.
Yeah. I want to see that.
So to get things started off, we're going to play a little true or false drinking game. And Eliza, you're up first with your person.
Okay. So I chose Anne Seymour, the Duchess of Somerset, because I found her to be fascinating over many years. She's a little known character. However, she played a huge role in the Tudor era. And I've done extensive research on her just because she truly fascinates me. So my first true or false question to you ladies is this. Anne was the mother-in-law of Catherine Grey, sister of Jane Grey. True or false?
False.
Drink up, ladies. She was. Yes, her son, she had 10 children, and one of her sons named Edward married Catherine Grey in secret.
Ooh.
The person I did was Lady Jane Grey. And the reason why I chose Lady Jane Grey, she was the queen between King Edward and Queen Mary of England, who Lori will be talking about later on today. At age 16, she was considered one of the most learned women in all of England. Her tale is a tragic one that warrants telling. My first question is, this is true or false. Jane was King Edward's cousin.
True.
False. She was actually his first cousin twice removed. Technically.
Trick question.
That is a trick question because she's Mary's cousin.
All right, drink.
Technically, she was Henry VIII's youngest sister, Mary's oldest daughter, whose name was Frances, who was her mother. So that's what second cousin twice removed is, a long tangle of branches, and there you go. Technically, she was Henry VIII's niece.
See, such and I know trick. She's Mary the first cousin, so I just assumed. Oh my goodness.
Actually, she's also Mary the first, second cousin twice, or first cousin twice removed.
Mm-hmm.
All this genealogy.
I know.
It gets so confusing.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, you know, at this rate, we're going to have a hard time getting through the rest of our facts.
We are.
I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing.
Tonight, I chose Mary the First of England, and I chose her for 2 reasons. Number one, because she's called Bloody Mary. And I felt that I needed to learn if she had anything to do with the scary game involving a mirror in the dark.
Okay, I was so scared about that when I was little. I literally couldn't sleep. I was so worried that it was going to happen to me. I couldn't have any mirrors in the room.
So, yes, when I found out that was her nickname, I had to do more research on it. And it does seem that there is a newer, modern version of the game that does refer to her. And I'm going to put the link for that game folklore in the show notes. But the other reason I chose to do her tonight was because after doing some more research on her, I felt really bad for her. I mean, she ends up doing some awful things, but she had a really rough childhood. My first true or false question tonight is, Mary was reunited with her mother when she was buried near her.
True.
False.
Madeline, drink up. We'll go into more detail later about what happened with Mary's mother, but just a little thing on what happened when she was buried was that she asked in her will to be buried next to her mother, but her wishes weren't honored. She was interned in Westminster Abbey in a tomb that she would eventually share with Elizabeth, her half-sister. And the Latin inscription on their tomb translates to "Consorts in realm and tomb, we, sisters, Elizabeth and Mary, here lie down to sleep in hope of resurrection."
Interesting. That's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how they would like that.
I don't know that they would.
Yeah, that's a tough call.
Relationship.
They did. Yeah. True or false, ladies? Catherine Parr, Henry VIII's sixth wife, nicknamed Anne Seymour "that hell" at court after Anne said that if Catherine's husband wouldn't teach her manners, Anne would.
True.
I'm going to go with true.
It's true.
Yay!
Yay!
Drama in real life.
Oh my goodness, right?
So do I drink for that one?
Yes.
Because you got it right.
Maybe so.
I think that's exactly how that should work. I was going to say there are no losers here, but technically there are no winners here either.
So true.
Back to Jane Grey. Jane was rumored to be a lover of Thomas Seymour. True or false?
True.
Yeah, true.
Thomas Seymour was definitely a rapscallion, to be sure. But
he died before, didn't he?
No, yeah.
I was wrong.
Jane is false.
Drink it up.
She was technically 11 at the time. However, her parents, so she was living with Catherine Parr and Thomas Seymour. Apparently, that was just the house of debauchery where everyone sent their young, impressionable daughters to be raised. She was there when Catherine Parr died, and she was one of the mourners at her funeral. And Thomas Seymour actually asked if she could come and live with him even after the funeral. And her parents agreed for just a couple of months, and then he ended up being arrested. But after she went back to live with him, they were trying to get her to come back home because they were afraid that he was going to run off and marry her, even though she was only 11 years old, just to get her fortune.
Oh my God.
So Thomas Seymour, like, no matter how you look at it, he's really gross. Total creepster. Yeah.
Ew. Yikes.
Right? Even like today, I would believe that rumor.
Totally believe it.
Yeah. I am back up with Mary the first, and here goes. Mary had a 10-month-long false pregnancy.
True.
It is true.
It was just a tumor.
Actually, no, in the research I did, it didn't say that she had a tumor, but if I had gone further into it, maybe somewhere else it would have.
Yeah, did say that it was she died of a tumor.
Yes, later on she does, but in September of 1554, she stopped having her period, and she gained a lot of weight, and she felt nauseous in the morning. Eventually, people thought she was going to have the baby May or June, and nothing happened, and there was lots of gossip that she wasn't pregnant. And finally, in July, her abdomen receded. So there was no baby, and it was most likely a false pregnancy, perhaps induced by Mary's overwhelming desire to have a child. Which is kind of crazy that you could have a false pregnancy for that long.
Wow.
10 months.
And like gain weight and your belly grow.
Yes.
I mean, that's some gas.
King Philip did say that he didn't think his wife was pregnant.
Well, because he hadn't shared his bed with her. And like,
right.
I know. Oh, yeah.
He was like, that girl's eating too much chocolate. Sorry.
Right. All by herself.
Mm-hmm. Poor lady.
Yeah, very sad.
It is very sad, because I'll talk about this in a little while, but she really was in love with him.
She was. That's sad. Mm-hmm. All right, my turn. Did we drink for that? Did we get it wrong or right? I can't remember.
Oh, you guys both got it right. So that I
so you drink.
Yeah, I'm going to drink. Woohoo!
Yay. All right. True or false? Henry Howard, Earl of Surrey, brother to Mary Howard, who married Henry VIII's illegitimate son, Henry Fitzroy, wrote a scathing poem about Anne in which he called her a bad word.
Ooh, I'm going to go with true on that one. It sounds
I'm going to go with true as well.
That was kind of a trick question because he called her a viper, which isn't really a bad word.
Yet another technicality, but to which I will still drink.
So we all drink on this one.
Yeah, I like that. We all drink.
All right, drinking on that. Because you were half right.
All right, so on to my third true-false. Jane Grey got married in May 1553 to Guilford Dudley, which, by the way, is Elizabeth I, Robert Dudley's brother. In case you were wondering, that is one and the same. So at the wedding, everybody who ate the food got sick with food poisoning. True or false?
False.
True.
Oh! I gotta pour more. See, this is the problem with pouring small glasses. I keep having to re-pour.
okay. It sounds lovely when you do it.
It does.
And I'm drinking with love. It makes me want to go get my gallon bottle of wine and, like, lug it out. It just wouldn't have quite the same effect. No delicacy there.
We'd be like, whoa, slow down.
So anyways, the cook who is making the wedding feast, not only for Jane and Guildford, but also for two other couples, because apparently marrying three people at the same time was like a thing back then. I mean, I get that weddings were expensive, so hey, you know, it's economical and practical. I could get that.
Totally. But, that makes sense.
Apparently, they skimped on the chef because he put the wrong leaf in the sauce, and everybody got food poisoning. So,
No
bonus, they didn't gain a lot of weight afterwards, I guess. So
true.
That's true. That's true. True. Gotta take it where you can get it, right?
I'm saying.
Hey, history lovers, Eliza here. We're interrupting today's happy hour to let you know that Lori and I host another fascinating podcast with our friend, Brenna Ash.
Hey there, this is Brenna. Crime Feast is a true crime podcast hosted by three friends who are obsessed with all things crime.
Each week, join Brenna, Eliza, and I as we serve up a platter of murders, mayhem, missing persons, tragedies, and more.
Feast on notorious tales ripped from today's headlines and resurrected from the past.
Until then, stay safe out there. We don't want you on the menu next.
Now, back to the show. Cheers!
So, back to Mary. Under Mary's reign, the English captured Calais in France.
False. It was during her reign.
During her reign. Oh, yeah. I guess that makes sense.
I said under her reign.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought you said after.
No.
Okay, then
under
true.
Mary's reign.
I'm going to go with false.
It's Mary's reign, right? It's true.
Mary the First, yes.
Yeah, she lost it.
No, she did lose it. She did not capture it.
So oh, I've had way too much wine already. I have had way too much wine. I'm like, yeah, after. No, wait, before. Wait, what?
So, England had control of Calais since the 14th century.
Yeah, she lost it.
Yes, but she lost control of Calais, and upon learning the news that England had lost its last possession in France, Mary is alleged to have responded, "When I am dead and opened, you shall find Philip and Calais lying in my heart."
Aww.
So I told you she really did love her husband.
That's sad.
She did, and she must have also really loved France.
Mm-hmm. Must have.
I'm up next with my fourth true or false question. Anne had 10 children, three of whom she named Edward, which would be the fourth Edward to her husband's name.
True. False. And they all sparkled in the sun.
It is true. It is true.
I'm going to be drinking. Because I have four children and four Edwards would drive me crazy.
Oh my gosh. Well,
I can't get names straight anyway.
You wouldn't even have to worry about it.
We all call them the wrong name anyways.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're all
just
named
call
the same
thing. Edward.
Yeah. It's perfect.
That is actually genius. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
In my all next life, whenever I have kids, they're going to all be the same name. And that way they're not like, oh, I thought you were talking to her. Be like, well, you know, any of you, whatever.
Any of you.
Somebody just emptied a dishwasher. I don't care.
Right? I have to tell you a funny story. So a few years ago, I was working on this ancient Roman book with some of my H Team 360 collaborators. And I wasn't very studied in the Roman era. So my fellow writers were helping me figure out like names and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, well, if the dad's name is Julius, then all of the children are Julius, including the girls. And I was like, wait, what? And I just couldn't get it through my head that literally everyone would be some form of Julius.
That's so they so take amazing. The first name and send it down the line instead of the last name.
Yeah, and then, like, everyone has a nickname. So, like, you know, your name might be, you know, Julius, and you might be the seventh Julius to your dad, Julius, and you might be called Big Toe, or number seven. So,
I think I'm gonna
so to make it less confusing.
Different names.
I was driving me crazy. I was like, what? I don't understand. I don't want her to be that name. I
bet
her to
that
be this
made
name.
Research really fun.
Oh, yeah.
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 So wait, which one was this? Dang it.
Wait, which one? Oh, gosh. There's so many of them.
Right? I know even with my kids, like, I'll call one name and I'll call the other name. Like, oh, God, whatever one you are, just do it.
Just get over here.
You know, you
I call my kids.
I'm looking at you. You know I'm talking about you.
I call my oldest daughter, I call her by my sister's name all the time. Like, she's my sister. I don't know why, but that's just her name. And then the little one is our giant dog. So poor girl has been called Ladybell 8 million times. And she's like, I'm not Ladybell. And I'm like, I know. I don't know why that's what you get. Sorry.
It's say I would never do it again, but let's be honest, we'll do this again tomorrow.
It's going to happen tomorrow, sorry.
My last fact for Lady Jane Grey. True or false, Lady Jane Grey spoke 7 different languages.
True.
True.
False. She only spoke 6.
Trick question.
That was a trick question.
It was
English, all of you drink.
Latin, French, Greek, Italian, and Hebrew. Ooh. Drinking to that, because if anybody can speak 6 languages fluently, they deserve to be drunken to.
They do. It is impressive.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I'm drinking to her.
Mm-hmm. I just did as well.
I just did too.
So this brings us to our last true and false of evening.
Oh, I have more wine left.
Oh, you can keep drinking. We still have more facts to go.
Oh, yeah.
So our last question is again about Mary the First. Despite his Protestant upbringing, the young King Edward let his sister practice her religion in peace.
Which
true.
Sister?
Mary.
True.
True-ish and false-ish.
It's absolutely false.
I'm drinking again.
When Mary was in her 30s, she had a reunion with Edward and Elizabeth at Christmas time, and the 13-year-old king embarrassed Mary and reduced both her and himself to tears in front of the whole court because he publicly reproved her for ignoring his laws regarding worship.
Wow. So the next time you think your family has problems.
Right?
Yes.
That's sad.
Yeah.
I feel like her whole life was sad.
So
poor
sad.
Thing.
It really was.
I agree.
So do you guys want to know a little bit more about Anne?
Yes, I would love to know more.
Okay.
And all the Edwards. So,
and all the Edwards.
All the sparkly Edwards.
All the sparkly Edwards in her life. She was definitely Team Edward.
Right?
So while not much is known about her earlier life, it is believed that Anne was lady-in-waiting to Catherine of Aragon. So she was pretty involved in the Tudor court from the very early beginning of Henry VIII's reign, which is where she likely met her future husband, Edward Seymour, sister to Jane Seymour, who was serving Henry VIII at the time. He was, however, married to his first wife, Catherine Filial, also so many Catherines, who ended up cheating on him with his own father and the son he thought... The son he thought was his was probably, in fact, his brother.
Oh!
Now, so how did these branches of the family tree get so convoluted?
Right?
No idea.
Crazy.
This might be my son, or he might be my brother. I'm not sure.
I may be your uncle, but I'm still your father.
So he sent her off to a nunnery, and when they believed that she must have died at some point a few years later, because he then married Anne. So much drama. I love it. When they married in 1535, they both continued to serve at court. This time, Anne was lady-in-waiting to Anne Boleyn, and possibly very instrumental in her downfall, given that Edward's sister was Jane Seymour, who they were trying to put in Anne Boleyn's place. When his sister was married to the king, they rose very steadily at court, first being titled Viscount and Viscountess, then Earl and Countess. Later on, after Henry VIII died and Edward was pronounced king, Edward Seymour became the protector of the realm and regent for his young nephew, who was now king, and named himself a duke in 1547 because
like
he had the power to do so.
Duchess.
Right? So, power trip. I'm now a duke and you're now a duchess, my right. lovely wife. So, by this time, Jane Seymour had already passed away, but Edward and Anne had one thing that no other family member connected to Henry VIII before them had, which was a male heir, which they used to their advantage immensely. Mm-hmm. Jane was mother of Prince Edward, the only legitimate male issue of Henry VIII, and as you learned in Madeline's podcast a couple of weeks ago, Jane died in childbirth, and as he considered her to be his one and only true wife, because, you know, she gave him the son he was so much wanting.
And she died while he still liked her. So,
exactly.
You know. Yes.
Exactly. He was buried beside her when he died in 1547. Oh, and by the way, Edward was also brother to Thomas Seymour, who I spoke briefly about in my podcast a few weeks ago, the one who inappropriately tickled Elizabeth I when she was a teenager.
trying to maybe marry
Jane Grey. Exactly. What a guy. Yeah. In the Tudor world, with great power often comes great downfall, and the Seymour couple had their slow descent starting in 1549 when Edward was ousted from the council who were conspiring against him, and he was arrested and Anne along with him and imprisoned in the Tower. However, she was let go shortly thereafter and pleaded with the young king to let her husband go, and the teenage king was shocked to find out that his uncle had been arrested because he had been told he was sick. So she then went to appeal to John Dudley, Duke of Northumberland, whose son was married to her daughter Anne, and you may recognize his name because his other son was the rumored lover of Queen Elizabeth. And Madeline also just briefly mentioned another brother of his in her facts a few moments ago. So he was released shortly thereafter and reinstated to the council, but his position of Lord Protector was taken away. This was not to be the end of it, however. Once you created enemies back then, there was no way of going forward. In November of 1551, Edward and Anne were arrested again, and in January of 1552, he was beheaded. She remained in the tower until Queen Mary, lovely Mary, released her in 1553, because she'd always maintained a relationship with this royal, despite her being ousted from the court. Anne certainly knew how to make friends in high places, I would say.
Indeed.
Sounds like it.
She went on to marry a lesser powerful man, so she kind of faded into the background. But then again, her son ended up marrying Catherine Grey in secret, so that kind of threw her back into the limelight.
And Catherine Grey didn't come out too good at the end of it either.
No, she didn't.
I think she ended up being
that's a very sad story. She was imprisoned, actually, until her death. So it's a really, really sad, tragic story. Actually, my book, Prisoner of the Queen, is the entire tale of poor Catherine's life.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And My Lady Viper, my other book, is Anne's story.
Oh, very nice.
Wow. Yes.
I love the Tudors.
I love
this. Can I just please go back in time?
I love this period. Except I would want to be a noble because I would not want to be a peasant. And people will hear
it. I wouldn't want to be a peasant, but I don't even know if I'd really want to be like a noble.
I don't know, but look at how tragic everything was for all these nobles.
I would just want to be like the lady in waiting, the one who quietly like in the corner sewed embroidered or something. I don't know.
Then you have all the men pawing at you and you can't do anything about it.
Yep.
That's true. And the king might force me to go to his bed.
Yes.
Dang it. What could I be? I couldn't be anything. I would just have to be invisible. I would need my cloak of invisibility.
I could go wherever I want.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Now I have to focus because I've been drinking a lot of wine. And so now I'm going to have to read through all of my notes. All right. So one of the things about Jane Seymour is her parents were pretty controlling. In fact, she actually told one of her tutors one time that she felt like her life was basically hell because her parents were supposedly abusive. Like it's mentioned, but there's not like a whole lot of detail behind it.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, she pretty much did whatever her parents told her to. Another thing about with Jane, way back in the day, 1540s, Henry VIII actually had signed a statement saying if Edward did not have any male heirs, then the throne could technically pass to Jane Grey, would be the next in line. They don't know why he happened to skip over Frances, her mother, but he went right to Jane Grey. So that opened the door for her to be eligible to be queen. So when Edward was on his deathbed, Northumberland actually got him to agree to sign saying that Jane Grey would be the next heir because he didn't want Mary to take the throne with her being Catholic, which is why I should have technically answered true to that, because I technically knew, but apparently I just wanted a sip of wine. So,
that's okay. You have to finish that giant glass.
That's a pretty big glass. There's still a lot to go. I may be slurring my words by the end of this. On July 9, 1553, Jane was informed that she was queen. However, she was reluctant to accept it, but accept it she did, especially with her parents at her back urging her onward. At this point, she was only 16 years old. Just an FYI. Imagine that responsibility. Most of us at 16 are like, that guy didn't talk to me and I really like him and I don't know if he's going to like me if I see him tomorrow. And she's like, oh my God, I'm queen, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, the great thing is her husband that was basically forced upon her to make sure that she was in a really great position, Guildford, she refused to make him king because it would take an act of parliament. Instead, she just made him Duke of Clarence. So this next part is great. So he decided to withhold intimacies from her in order to get her to concede for him to be a king. It didn't work.
He only had to hold it for 9 days.
Right. Bless his heart. But the greatest part about it is that it was his mother's advice. It works with your father every time.
Yeah. And poor Jane is probably like, okay, great.
Right? She's like 16. She's like, whatever, man. I'm just going to sit here and read Plato. You do whatever you got to do. And he's like, you're going to miss it. You are going to miss it so hard.
She's like, okay.
She's like, sure thing, my buddy. Mom says this is going to work like magic. So anyways, during this time that Jane is on the throne, Mary is rallying up support from the people to put her back on the throne. Now, one of the things you have to remember about Mary is that you have to go all the way back to Catherine of Aragon. And the people loved Catherine of Aragon, and they never got over that love. In fact, they never really accepted the fact that Henry VIII had divorced her. And so they always looked at Mary as her being their rightful princess. So when she tried to rally their support, she got it. I don't know how many of those people she killed, because the whole Catholic Protestant thing.
I'll go over that in a minute.
Yeah, that awkward moment for sure.
We're fading right into that next.
Yeah. We'll get there next. But she got a huge amount of support. So much, in fact, that Parliament actually flopped on their decision and no longer supported Jane Grey, but gave their support to Mary. So Jane was arrested 9 days later and brought to court. Initially, they were talking about giving her a traitor's death. And a traitor's death for women was to be burned at the stake. So, you know, with men, I had talked about it previously, where they have to be hanged, drawn, quartered, burned, mm-hmm. all this horrible stuff. With women, it's, you know, it's just a burn at the stake. It's cool.
Yeah, no big deal.
No big deal.
Yeah.
So they were hoping for at least like a beheading. So it's a little bit more humane. And in fact, Mary didn't want to do any of it. She felt like Jane was really a victim in all of this. And so she was going to excuse all of it. However, Jane's father and her uncles decided to join a rebellion that was going on against Mary's plans to marry Prince Philip of Spain. And they got caught. And because they got caught, Mary's hand was pretty much forced and she had to sign the execution for Jane Grey, which is really
sad
that she actually was about to get out of it, and her stupid father, who probably was the one who put her on the throne in the first place,
right,
was the one who ultimately ended up making her die. It just
what a jerk.
Sucks. I'll drink to that.
Yeah, let's drink to that.
I'll drink to that.
Yep.
Poor girl.
I know.
Can you imagine? She's only 16.
16.
Yeah.
Like crazy.
All that pressure and terrible
and
people.
And such a smart girl too.
Right?
So, February 12th, 1554, her husband Guilford was actually beheaded. They put his remains into a wagon and cart and drove them past her room. And she looked down and she happened to see him. This was when, you know, she never really had expressed any affinity toward him. But when she saw him, she was genuinely distressed. Aside from just the fact that it's a headless body going by, that somebody that you know. But she said, oh, right. Guilford, Guilford, and, you know, very, very emotional. Then it was her turn. Mary had given her a priest to talk to in the hopes of getting her to convert to Catholicism. And though Jane never did actually convert to Catholicism, she ended up befriending the priest and actually let him walk her up to the scaffold. When she got up to the scaffold, she delivered a very beautiful and eloquent speech that was very intellectual. She looked at the executioner and she asked if he could take off her head before she put her head on the block, and he said no. So she tied her own blindfold on, and she's trying so hard to be brave. And remember, she's 16 years old. I mean, when I was 16, I felt invincible. And you know that you're literally getting ready to die. So she ties on her blindfold and she reaches out. She can't feel the block that she's supposed to put her head on. And she starts freaking out because she can't find this block. This is the one thing that she has to do and she can't find it. And so one of the guys takes her and leads her over and she settles her head on the block and then she's executed. So it was just a very, very, very sad story. I feel like she was such a victim of circumstance here and influence from her family. And I feel like her family at the end of it just didn't give a crap about her. It's just really sad.
She was just a pawn.
Yeah, and such an incredibly intelligent woman. You would wonder if this had never happened to her, and what could she have done with her life with that kind of learning, you know?
Amazing things, I'm certain.
So, here we are at Mary I of England. Now, Mary was the only child of King Henry VIII and his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, who survived infancy. And for a while, he treated her as if she were a prince, not merely a princess. He gave her her own court and many royal rights and duties that were typically reserved for the Prince of Wales. Henry also attempted to secure a good marriage for her. But when it became clear that he and Catherine wouldn't have any male children, he abandoned Mary's mother. He sent Catherine away and wouldn't even let Mary visit her. Can you imagine, as a young child, your father sending your mom away and not letting you see her at all? So then Henry divorced Catherine and left the Catholic Church, which is the religion she grew up with, the one she knew, and he had her, his only child, declared illegitimate. Later on, he forces her to sign papers renouncing her Catholic religion. But when Elizabeth, his daughter with Anne Boleyn, was born, Mary's household was dissolved, and she was sent to join the house of her younger sister, where she was now only a lowly lady while Elizabeth became the favored princess. So imagine going from being the favorite child to an afterthought.
That's what happened. And terrible. When you're a child, you just don't understand that.
No.
No, that and, you know, the religion that your parents have taught you, that all of a sudden they're like, no, you can't do that anymore. And being taken from your mother, to me, that's the worst. She eventually succeeded her father and younger brother after a failed attempt to hold the crown by her cousin, Lady Jane Grey. So that's why I guess that she was a cousin in the true or false connection because okay. I knew she was a cousin to Mary.
Well, technically she is a cousin, but she's a first cousin twice removed.
So, after she was crowned, she set her sights on finding a husband. And after treaties and many considerations and compromises were made, she married Philip of Spain at the age of 37.
Dang.
So, yeah, it was pretty late in life. But you know what? When you're tossed aside by your father and not given any kind of consideration, your marriage just kind of goes by the wayside until you're old and there you are. But he was the son of Emperor Charles V, and in order to elevate Philip's rank, his father ceded to him the crown of Naples and his claim to the Kingdom of Jerusalem. Therefore, Mary also became the Queen of Naples and Jerusalem.
Oh, interesting.
Their marriage was very unpopular because he was Catholic, as well as a foreigner. A lot of people in Parliament wanted her to marry another Englishman. So she had patriots and Protestants angry with her at the beginning of her reign. It was said that on Philip's part, the marriage was concluded for no fleshy consideration. You know how we talked about he didn't care for her?
Yeah.
That's such a sad description.
Sad. That really is.
That's very sad.
And despite being described as being attractive at a really young age, I mean, at this point, you know, she's older. I didn't look up how old Philip was at the time, but you know what? She had her father's complexion, which was like ruddy, whatever King Henry VIII had. So she got some of his bad qualities. And the sad thing is, on the flip side, when Philip left England to command his armies against the French in Flanders, she was heartbroken. And it was said that she was extraordinarily in love with her husband. And we know that from My True or False now, because she said when they cut open her heart, he's going to be in it.
That's really sad.
That is very sad.
It is sad. I felt so bad for her until we get to this next point. Her whole life was a tragedy until this.
And then she became a raging
She's
psychopath.
Like, kill it all.
Yeah. Yes, power goes to people. And after she became queen, Mary set about reversing her father's and her younger brother Edward VI's strict anti-Catholic policies, which in itself is not that bad of a thing. But in 1555, she revived England's heresy laws and began burning offenders at the stake.
Lovely.
Yes. Almost 300 convicted heretics, most of them just common citizens, were burned. Dozens more died in prison, and approximately 800 fled the country, which in the long run, they eventually returned with Calvinist ideas, which in turn led to English Puritanism. So essentially, her whole thing there backfired on her, and obviously she was long gone before that happened. But so my whole point of how I felt so bad for her in the end, after all the years of being prosecuted for her religion, she turned around and did the same thing to others, which earned her the nickname Bloody Mary.
Which, Bloody Mary is technically kind of deceptive, because it makes her sound like she was the most bloody of all the rulers. But you said, how many did she kill? 300?
300, yeah.
So her father killed like 72,000. I'm just saying, like, Bloody Mary got nothing on Bloody Henry.
You know who gave her this nickname was the Protestants.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, it's all what gets written down about you.
Right.
Isn't that crazy?
I guess the monks should have spread more rumors. Hashtag some history nerd humor for you there, guys. Yeah.
So right. Now I think we're supposed to talk about what we read this week.
Yes. So mine is actually a book that I just recently started. It's a World War II novel. I am a huge World War II buff. I like to read World War II novels a lot. So this one is called The Ragged Edge of Night by Olivia Hawker. I'm going to read the blurb. I just started listening to it, and so far the narrator is really good, and it's a pretty gripping novel, and I feel like the descriptions are incredibly vivid. You can really, really see them, and they're power-packed. Like, they've got a ton of emotion in them as well. So the blurb for The Ragged Edge of Night. Germany, 1942. Franciscan friar Anton Starsman is stripped of his place in the world when his school is seized by the Nazis. He really... God, I can't... Too much wine. He relocates to a small German hamlet to wed Elizabeth Herder, a widow he seeks a marriage, in name only, to a man who can help raise her three children. Anton seeks something too, an atonement for failing to protect his young students from the wrath of the Nazis. But neither he nor Elizabeth expects their lives to be shaken once again by the inescapable rumble of war. As Anton struggles to adapt to the roles of husband and father, he learns of the Red Orchestra, an underground network of resistors plotting to assassinate Hitler. Despite Elizabeth's reservations, Anton joins the Army of Shadows. But when the SS discovers his schemes, Anton will embark on a final act of defiance that may cost him his life, even if it means saying goodbye to the family he has come to love more than he ever believed possible. Very good, that sounds so far. I'll let you guys know.
Very deep, yeah.
You told me when you were getting this, so I downloaded it too. So I haven't listened to it yet, so I'm really curious.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll let you know how it is.
So I did the exact opposite. I needed an escape this week, so I went for something light and paranormal. I downloaded from the library Into the Fire, a Night Prince novel by Janine Frost. In the explosive finale to New York Times bestselling author Janine Frost's Night Prince series, Vlad is in danger of losing his bride to an enemy whose powers might prove greater than the Prince of Vampires.
Ooh.
In the wrong hands, love can be a deadly weapon. For nearly 600 years, Vlad Tepes cared for nothing, so he had nothing to lose. His brutal reputation ensured that all but the most foolhardy stayed away. Now, falling in love with Layla has put him at the mercy of his passions, and one adversary has found a devastating way to use Vlad's new bride against him. A powerful spell links Layla to the necromancer Mircea. If he suffers or dies, so does she. Magic is forbidden to vampires, so Vlad and Layla enlist an unlikely guide as they search for a way to break the spell. But an ancient enemy lies in wait, capable of turning Vlad and Layla's closest friends against them, and finally tearing the lovers apart forever. So, the reason I picked this book is because, like I said, I needed something light and fun, and paranormal is one of my loves. But also, it was one of the few things that I could get at the library on short notice, because I haven't joined Audible yet. I'm going to do it, but I haven't done it yet. So, this is what I ended up with. I know I am. And the sad thing is, this is book 4 in a series, and I normally don't do this, but I haven't read the other 3.
Oh, wow.
So, now I feel like I have to go back, because in this one, there are already an established couple, and I love that part where they fall in love. Yes. And I can see that in this last one, and they have a really crazy relationship, and I really enjoyed this book, so I will be going back for the first 3 in this series.
That's awesome. Funny story, mm-hmm. I don't remember which RDBA it was I went to, but it was one of the earlier ones, and I was trying to get Hoff like into reading romance at the time. And so I went to her table for a signing and got one of her first books. I'm not sure what the title was. I'll have to look it up and put it in the show notes. But she ended up signing a book for him, and he read her whole series.
Oh, that's great.
That's awesome.
It was really cute. So the book I listened to this week, because I also downloaded a book with my Audible app, was Silent in the Grave, a Lady Julia Gray mystery by Deanna Raiborn. Let the wicked be ashamed, and let them be silent in the grave. These ominous words are the last threat that Sir Edward Grey receives from his killer. Before he can show them to Nicholas Brisbane, the private inquiry agent he has retained for his protection, he collapses and dies at his London home, in the presence of his wife Julia and a room full of dinner guests. Prepared to accept that Edward's death was due to a long-standing physical infirmity, Julia is outraged when Brisbane visits and suggests that her husband was murdered. It is a reaction she comes to regret when she discovers damning evidence for herself and realizes the truth. Determined to bring the murderer to justice, Julia engages the enigmatic Brisbane to help her investigate Edward's demise. Dismissing his warnings that the investigation will be difficult, if not impossible, Julia presses forward, following a trail of clues that lead her to even more unpleasant truths, and even closer to a killer who waits expectantly for her arrival.
And it sounds so good.
It's really, really good. I can't think of the year offhand, but I think it's either Regency or Victorian era. It's really good. And the narrator is really good, too.
I've got to get that one. Yeah, as soon as awesome. I sign up for Audible.
It's a series, too, so I'm excited to see where it goes next.
I have a list of books that you need to read. Oh, when you get on Audible, I have a list of favorites. Oh, my gosh. Eliza and I are like, and then there's this. Oh,
get this, and then this one.
You should go on ahead.
You guys
and
just need to start making the list for me now.
Yep. Add your wish list.
Exactly.
My wish list is so freaking long.
So long.
My friend just gave me two more today that I have to listen to. One is called The Wife, and another one...
Are they thrillers?
Mm-hmm.
The Wife sounds like a thriller.
I think it might have been. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to look it up. She just, like, at the bus stop, she's like, I have two books for you that you need to download from Audible, The Wife, and now I can't remember the name of the second one, but it was about a famous author's wife in Paris.
I see a theme here.
Oh my god, they're all about wives. And the one I read on my last podcast was The Last Wife.
Yeah. Wife is like a really big word right now, I feel like. Yeah.
Before it was girl.
It's like I'm now it's wife. John, if you like it, then you should have put a ring on it.
That's right.
No, he actually was asking about what rings I like the other day.
He is such a sweet guy.
He is such a sweet guy.
He
is. My goodness.
And he buys giant bottles of wine.
I mean, right there. Glittery cupcakes.
Glittery cupcakes. He had them put edible glitter all over the cupcakes. And on top
so
of
much.
That, he sprinkled glitter all over the dining room for my birthday because he knows how much I love it. And then he also cleaned it up.
Oh, that's even better.
It took like five emptyings of the bowels of the vacuum cleaner because they were all filled with glitter. And it's so funny because the house is still covered in glitter.
That's so funny.
We were joking that when we go to sell this house, like in 10 years,
it's still going to have glitter.
Like, wow, there's glitter everywhere. Did you guys have a party? I'm like, yeah, like 10 years ago.
Yeah,
10 years ago. But well, I loved
and
it.
And he also sent you those cute puppy dog flowers.
Yes.
To work.
That was adorable.
So cute. John is awesome.
Oh, Mr. Awesome.
He's so Mr. Awesome.
He really is. Oh, I wanted to tell you, I didn't want to interrupt you before, but my birthday is also July 9th, so every year we'll have to remember Jane Grey.
Yes, we definitely will.
Aww. Yeah.
We'll have to have a toast to her.
Yes.
And to you.
Except it's sad. Now that we're depressed again, I'll bring us some happy with the book. With more drinks. And this week, the book that I chose of my own to share with all of you is The Highlander's Secret Vow, which actually just released a couple of weeks ago. And I'm so excited for all the great feedback I've been getting from readers who have already read it. Because Liam, he's the hero in this story. He's the second son of my hero Magnus from The Highlander. Reward, and he is probably one of my favorite heroes in a long time. He's just full of life and really sexy and all that. So I'll read you a little blurb. When Liam Sutherland was a lad of 16 summers, he saved a lassie's life and secretly vowed to always keep her safe. As the prized warrior of his clan and youngest son of the laird, he has responsibilities, but he can't ignore a mysterious missive from the Sassenach, who has come from his past, a woman with the power to make him leave everything behind. Cora Seagrave, daughter of an English baron, owes her life to the Scot who saved her years ago during a border raid. When her family home is destroyed and she's taken prisoner, there's only one man she knows who can save her, the one she's never been able to forget. Answering Cora's plea for aid will jeopardize Liam's reputation and maybe even cause a rift with his family. But a vow is a vow, and he cannot turn his back on her or his heart. He has to save her before it's too late and pray his family and king will understand. By saving her, he may just save himself.
Ooh, I like that.
I love it.
Thank you.
And so I have a new release coming up on April 22nd. Yay. It's Highland Salvation.
Yay. High fives.
Yes, it's book 4 in my Highland Pride series, and it's already up for pre-order, and I'm starting to get reviews on it, so I'm very excited. Here is a little bit about Highland Salvation. Finley Cameron, the bastard son of an English earl and a Scottish mother, weds stunning, outgoing Blair McNab to ensure her clan's loyalty to King Charles. She's everything he's ever wanted in a wife, but he suspects she may be plotting his murder.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Always considered to be nothing more than a pretty face, Blair McNab yearns to prove her worth. She refuses to be used as a pawn for political gain, but when confronted by a blackmailer, her only option is to marry the brawny Finley Cameron. In Finley's arms, she feels safe for the first time ever, until she learns that her blackmailer is hot on her trail and her secrets could soon be exposed.
Oh, I like that. That sounds
very
awesome.
Nice. Yeah, so I'm excited about this one coming out.
Mm-hmm. And the cover is gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you. I think they did a good job with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the book that I'm talking about actually is coming out on April 16th, so in just a few days from when you guys will all be listening to this. So this is an anthology called Dukes by the Dozen. technically a Duke for All Seasons, which, I mean, what better thing to do for All Seasons than having a Duke, right? Yeah. So this is collectively written by myself, Grace Burrows, Ella Quinn, Mae McGolrick, Sabrina York, Elizabeth Essex, Jennifer Ashley, Bronwyn Evans, Eileen Dreyer, Anna Harrington, Gina Conkle, Heather Snow, and Alyssa Alexander. So it's a huge group of authors all bringing you a Regency romance. So what's better than a dashing Duke? A dozen of them, of course. In this case, a baker's dozen. 13 of your favorite historical romance authors have come together to bring you more than a dozen tantalizing novellas, with one per month for a year's worth of never-before-released romances. My book is called Discovering the Duke by Mount... That's so funny.
By who?
Me.
Title?
My contribution is called Discovering the Duke. Reunited at a house party after a lackluster start to their marriage, the Duke of Sedton attempts to win his Duchess's heart. Will a sizzling wager be enough to melt the frost between them, or will it truly remain the coldest winter in London? So this releases on April 16th, and for those of you who may have read Mesmerizing the Marquis, this actually happens before Mesmerizing the Marquis. So if you love Noah and Helen together, you get to see Noah before he meets Helen, when he's just a curmudgeonly single guy. So ooh, yay, I thought that was kind of fun.
Sounds
it was
great.
Fun to write it. Yeah. Okay, so now our question from our readers. They want to know, what is our favorite wine? So, Lori, you opened it up, so I'll go ahead and pass it off to you. What's your favorite wine?
My favorite wine is currently the Josh Cabernet Sauvignon North Coast Reserve. And this is the one that I talked about on the Valentine List Lassies. And I think I talked about it on a previous podcast. I drank it on a previous podcast. And tonight, I'm having the Kenwood Merlot, which is a very close second, but the North Coast Reserve by Josh is really delicious, and it's got burst with plum and blackberry flavors. It's layered with smoky vanilla and roasted almonds and hazelnuts, and I really recommend it.
I love Josh.
He's awesome. Or his father was awesome, because he made the wine after his father.
I actually just had the Josh Cab Sav at Girls Night with a few of my mom friends last week, and it was half price bottle night at the restaurant we were at, so it cost less at the restaurant to buy the whole bottle than it did like if we went to the wine store to buy it.
Wow. Ooh, which like never happened.
I love
happened.
That. Right?
Like,
exactly.
Like an 80% markup.
Exactly.
Wow,
so we were like yes, we
have Josh. Wine, and then you go to Publix and you're like, wow, that was $8, huh?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's a little lackluster there.
Whoops. Yeah. It's delicious. My wine of choice for favorites this week is
mine
the,
changes every week too.
I know. Right now it's the Bogle, but I mentioned this on a previous podcast, the stick wine, which I can't pronounce. Just literally go to the wine store, look under the Italian red section in the wine bottle with a stick on it. That is still my favorite. And it is a literal stick. I have gotten splinters from it. Be careful, because it hurts.
Like, good to know.
Yeah.
Really, I bought one, and it's in my wine cabinet waiting.
Wow. Be careful. The splinter went under my nail, like that kind of like, ouch.
The wine
hazardous. It did. Good. I didn't feel it after. But yeah, so the stick wine, honestly, that's like my favorite of the whole year. But this week it's the Bogle.
And because your stick wine stabbed you.
I know.
It was your favorite until it stabbed you.
We're broken up right now.
Oh.
We're broken up. But I also really love champagne. So whenever there's anything special happening, I will usually go get a blush champagne. Right now I like the Daibun Cava Brut, I think is what it's called. It's pink. Mm. Pink sparkles, and that to me is like, I don't know, it's like champagne, but like specialer because it's pink.
And it sparkles.
And it sparkles. And so that's like, if you were asking me what my favorite bubbly was for celebration nights, that's what I like for that.
Bubbly is always good. I don't usually, and it's I would so probably good. Like that. I don't, because I don't usually do champagne because I had a bad experience.
Aww.
When I was like 21, my friend and I thought it would be so posh if we just drank champagne and nothing but champagne the entire night. And you know
I've
it's a
that.
Bad hangover.
Yeah, bad idea.
You've been hungover for like 3 days.
Yeah, don't do it.
Oh,
yeah.
It was so awful. In fact, the next morning I woke up and I was like, oh my God, did I really call my parents last night?
Oh,
and
no.
Then I was like, oh, and I called everybody on my phone list.
Oh.
Yay. Oh, that was awkward.
Yay.
I did what my friends, so I'm Polish, and so I did what my friends used to call the drunken Polak, where they would be like, where did Madeline go? And then somebody would have to go to the bathroom, and they would open the door to the bathroom, and I would be like asleep on the toilet bowl, like
oh,
with my
no.
head like hanging over the toilet bowl. where it's like, just in case I throw up, I'm going to be here. And I would just fall asleep. So I totally pulled a drunken Pollock, and I was so hungover for like 3 days. So champagne and I, now I'll have like, oh, I'll do a sip.
A glass.
That's good. A sip. I may switch to the rosé bubbly because it sounds significantly more pleasant.
It's really delicious. Yeah. And I usually don't drink like a whole bottle by myself. I have occasionally had a whole bottle by myself, I will admit it. And it's what I like to call, when I'm hanging out with my siblings, we call it living our best life. Because like, you know, your third cup in, you're like, I'm just living my best life. Leave me alone. Like, I'm going to keep drinking. And we had this whole joke because we were just in New York City for St. Patrick's Day. And we were all living our best life that night. Didn't get to bed till 3 a.m. Did not live our best life the next morning.
Probably not.
No. Oh, but yeah. I did do a 2 mile walk in Central Park to like get over the hangover. That's the best thing to do, honestly. Hint to our readers. If you've had too much wine, the following morning, get up, drink so much water, pop a couple of Advil, and then go for a 2-3 miler, because sweating it out, you will feel great the rest of the day.
Yes.
At least for me anyway.
Yeah. I remember one time, oh my gosh, I was so horribly hungover, and I dragged my butt out of bed and I put on my workout clothes and I went to Zumba, and I'm like, I'm either going to throw up or I'm going to feel amazing after this. And I felt amazing after, so it was great.
Yeah. Because you just sweat it all out. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, your body just, you need to
burn that evil
digest
out.
It and like burn it off.
Yeah.
So workout, people. You drink too much, workout.
Exactly. In fact, I have a shirt that says, I work out so I can drink more wine. I should wear that.
I love your shirt.
Some people be like, oh yeah, we see that.
Yeah.
So my favorite overall wine, technically, is Pinot Noir. I've never had.
I love Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir, I do too. I didn't like. And so same. I do prefer red wines, but I love Pinot Noir because it just is so smooth. So I have a fun little interesting fact about that. I did some research on it because I'm writing my Borderland Ladies series, and I wanted them to drink, you know, the wine. And I was like, I wonder if they had Pinot Noir back then. So I looked it up, and actually, they did. Pinot Noir was first mentioned in 1370 under the name Noirien. They actually had it earlier than that, but that was really just when it was actually mentioned in text. So, but it's associated with medieval Burgundy and is believed to be able to produce red wines of quality and able to impress the papal court. So,
Noirien still impresses me. So,
Pinot Noir dates back to the 14th century. So, it's that good. It's like sharks, man. They don't evolve.
Yep.
Like the Pinot Noir, it's been good since the 14th century. It needs like a bumper sticker or something.
My stick wine is a Pinot Noir.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm going to have to get that and wear like gardening gloves to open it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another Pinot Noir that was my favorite for a really long time was the Mark West Pinot Noir.
Ooh, that one is good.
That, it's really good, yeah.
I've never seen Mark West.
It's really good. It's got like a yellowish label. And they have fun corks too. What was the canvas? Was it a Pinot Noir?
It was Pinot Noir, yeah.
No, I thought it was Cabernet Sauvignon. Well, That's what I got for us.
The canvas is just the name of the brand, but they have all different ones. So they...
it'll be delicious no matter what.
We've probably had a bunch of the different ones. Yeah.
We just were like, give us the canvas. I know. The red.
We'll take the canvas. What kind? Any kind. It's red. We'll take
any
that one.
Kind.
It has a canvas on the label and is red. We'll drink it. Thank you.
That's
we
right.
get less discerning as the night goes on.
Yep.
And speaking of that, we will have some canvas. Yay! And literally save it for our next happy hour.
I'm so excited.
Literally 2 weeks from the night this show that you're listening to right now is airing, we will all be together at our annual writer's retreat, where we will be drinking this canvas that we're speaking of and hopefully recording a podcast.
Yes. And drinking a lot more and eating a lot more and hopefully also writing, because we need to do
and
a lot
also
of that.
Absolutely, I'm writing. Totally going to be needing to exercise as well.
Yeah, I'm bringing my weights, by the way.
Yep, me too. I'm bringing my kettlebell, bring it.
Oh, crazy eights, here we come.
Here we come.
Bring on the
crazy
eights.
I am so sore right now. So sore right now. I made my older daughter do the kettlebell workout with me yesterday, and she was like, I can't feel anything. I don't feel anything. And she was like pushing harder and harder. I was like, you're going to feel that tomorrow. You might want to calm down. And she's like, no, I can't feel anything. And she's a dancer, so she's already really toned. So this morning, she came home between classes because she does college in the morning and high school in the afternoon. And she was like, Mom, I can walk. And I was like, good job.
I have an evil cackling meme gif in my head that's like, mwah.
Exactly.
But yeah, I'm actually doing kettlebells tomorrow, and I'm already trying to psych myself up for it. Although I have to say, it is pretty fun.
I actually love it. It's fun.
It is a lot of fun.
I do imagine, though, while I'm swinging the kettlebell, that I might let go and it'll go through the wall. So, she was doing her part, and I started to, swing the kettlebell, and then I actually turned around because I was, oh my gosh, I am just picturing myself tossing this thing right at her head. I was actually going to do it, but if it let go,
right.
I mean, my kettlebell's
20
pounds.
And then you grip tighter.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Well, and I thought that before because I do my kettlebell workouts at the gym. They have
right into the mirror.
So, well, no, it's the people walking. But, the thing is, I've got the option where I can face a wall and stick my butt out and have everyone see my butt every time I squat. Or I can face people and be like, I hope nobody gets busted with this. And if so, I'm real sorry.
Sorry.
Okay. So you guys are totally going to kick my butt when we meet for our retreat. And you're going to really have to watch me because I have never touched a kettlebell.
Oh, it's going to be
so
much fun.
You're not going to sit down right for 2 days, girl.
No, but we'll feed you lots of wine and you'll feel better.
We'll bring some Motrin. You'll be good.
Yeah. Exactly.
We're going to introduce you to the Crazy Eight. Oh, yes.
Those are so fun. I actually have a beat that I do with it. I'm like, yeah, yeah, pass, pass, pass between my legs. Crazy Eight.
Okay, yeah, see, going. I'm already right. hurting just listening.
I'm like, look, I can toss favorite. It. I'm like, the kettlebell's not even in my hand right now. It's in the air and I'm catching it. It's actually probably not safe.
It's one of those things where I think we feel like we look really cool, but we probably look like a total awkward idiot and ungainly.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I like to think really rather than being, I'm going to go do a kettlebell workout, I'm like, I'm going to go sling some weights.
That's right.
Yeah.
Don't mind me.
I'm going to get strong.
20 pound bad boy around. It's cool.
You can do it. You can do it.
See, I'm sure I'm going to love that because I love the kickboxing and the punching.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You'll love slinging some weights around. It's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of kickboxing, punching, I bought this thing because both of my older daughters really wanted to take up a kickboxing or actually not even kickboxing. They both wanted to take a boxing class, but the one near us, it was just dumb. You had to be 18 or over to actually just go in and punch a bag. Before that, you had to do where they warm you up to punching the bag. And I was like, they just want to punch. Mm-hmm. So I got this thing. It's called the Quiet Punch. And it is, what's it called? Where the bars are suspended in the doorway. You can take it off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You tighten it in the doorway. So it's a giant punching bag that you tighten in your doorway and you just go to town on it. Mm. And they love it. It's so much fun. I haven't tried it yet. My older one she's crazy. So her entire knuckles on both hands right now actually are all scabbed up.
Oh, she needs some punching gloves.
I got them for her.
Oh.
Yeah, she went nuts.
That just means no one's gonna mess with her.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, that's the thing. I sent a picture to Hoff, and he was like, oh my god, seriously, we have no problems next year when she's in college. She's good. But it's just so much fun, and it's a great way to get some aggression out. I don't know, maybe I'll bring it with us when we go to our retreat, and we can, punch, because that would be really fun.
I think I will do that. As long as she'll be okay being without it for a week.
I think she'll be fine.
So, question for our readers. Do you have a snuggly fur baby that you love to read with? If so, we love her. Babies, and we would love to see some pictures. Yes. So please feel free to send them to us, as well as any questions that you may have at our email address, historybooksandwine@gmail.com.
And next month, we will be discussing everyday life and history, things such as cleaning, cooking, and health
It's actually going to be a lot more interesting, I think, probably. But
yeah, it's actually going to be really super fun. And then at our happy hour, we're going to talk about hygiene, which is going to be really fun.
And gross and fun. And
yeah, totally gross and fun. We can't wait because we're like, okay, fine, we'll talk about cleaning and cooking, but can we talk about hygiene, please? It's so much fun.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about stews.
Oh my God.
So, our website is historybooksandwine.buzzsprout.com. We'll have the show notes for today's episode listed there. They can also be found on iTunes with our podcast. And we are now on Spotify, SoundCloud, Google, and Alexa. Simply say, Alexa, play History Books and Wine podcast to hear the latest episode. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And if you like what you heard today, please leave us a review. And remember, you can always send us questions at historybooksandwine@gmail.com. We hope you enjoyed hearing about some of our fun historical tidbits.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out our new episodes published weekly on Thursdays. Next up is myself, Eliza, on April 18th, Madeline on April 25th, Lori on May 2nd, and our next happy hour is May 9th.
Yay!
So be on the lookout for us. Cleaning, cooking, health, hygiene. It's going to be amazing. Trust us. Seriously.
Lots of fun.
We make history fun. We make history fun, I promise.
Yes.
So have a great week, everyone. Bye. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye. Thank you.